All right. Nick Hutchinson, welcome to the show, man. It's good to see you.
Mike, I'm happy to be here, man. Can I ask you the first question today?
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. You're the second guest that's done that to me. It seems to be a reoccurring theme. Maybe it might be a pattern. Maybe this is just my podcast that my guests come on and interview me.
Who was it that asked you the first question?
I'm trying to remember. I want to say it was Pia Leister. She was the one that asked me about it. She's a brand consultant off X, and she's great. We started following each other like 6 months ago, and I had her on the show.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, here is my question. Hopefully, it's not the same question. No. What is the best book that you read in 2023? Because we just wrapped up 2023 at the time of this filming. So yeah. I'm curious, what comes to mind when I ask you that question?
The best book that I've read, I actually have it. So I'm going to give you a visual aid on this.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, no, this is going to be good. Let me pull this out. This book here.
I have not read that. 177.
It's 177. For those of you who can't see, this is the audio version. 177 Mental Toughness Secrets of the World Class. Mm. The Thought Processes, Habits, and Philosophies of the Great Ones by Steve Seibold. I hope I got that name right. That was the best book I read. And the reason why that book is so great is because when you dive into it, and I'm opening it up right now, it has these passages in it. And you can see this, Nick. Mm-hmm. But like, it's one little paragraph, and it's very straight to the point. Like this one I just opened up to, the world class embraces free enterprise. And it just gives you a whole little segment about it. And then it says action step for today. And then here's the world class resource. And then it gives you a book on to expands on the habit. This book's great. I got it from my buddy, Chris Vasquez. And that's the best book I read so far this year.
All right. Well, I will also be taking notes today.
Yeah. it could double as a bathroom book, and it also can double as definitely, a daily reflection. You know, it's not something you want to rush into. It's not something you want to speed through. It's like, oh, interesting, embraces free enterprise, or, oh, world-class embraces grit and resilience. So yeah, you got to read it. It's very cool.
Yeah, I love the daily reflection style books. I read The Daily Stoic from Ryan Holiday for years and years and years. And then right now I'm working my way through a daily read. Stephen Pressfield just put out a new daily book called The Daily Pressfield. And every day there's, just like that book, there's one passage on overcoming resistance. And so I've found it a powerful way to sort of kick off the day. But anyway, thank you for indulging my curiosity there.
Yeah, of course.
I love books.
I know you do. And that's one of the reasons why we're having you on here, outside of you just being a outstanding human being and sharing your knowledge and your love of books with the world. But more importantly for everybody, thank you guys for tuning in to Nick and I's study session that we just had briefly on the show. So now we're going to come back and we're going to get right into this amazing conversation. Thanks for all of you for joining. Nick Hutchinson is joining me. You may know Nick from Book Thinkers on Instagram, but you may also know Nick specifically as the guy that tells you what books you should be reading. And Nick, I got to tell you, we worked together in a capacity when my book came out last year. I had a lot of fun. You and your team were great. But one of the things that I was so fascinated by was your passion for books. I mean, you are a guy that is like all about reading, consuming knowledge, finding what works for you. You teach people it. So let's just dive into that. How did you discover that reading was part of your truth?
Well, what might surprise anybody that can only hear us is that despite the fact that I have 1,000 books behind me.
Is that how many are behind you?
Yeah, well more, oh my way God. Way over 1,000 probably. I don't know how many are behind me, but I was not much of a reader growing up. I was more of the athlete stereotype, not really much of the academic. So I focused all of my free time on playing football. I was captain of the wrestling team, and you couldn't pay me to do my homework. And that attitude of, I don't need reading, like I can figure it out myself, that stayed with me through most of my college experience as well. But everything changed for me when I took an internship going into my senior year of college at a local software company, because my director of sales, my mentor, my boss at the time, Kyle, he introduced me to the world of podcasting. I think that he saw some unfulfilled potential in this young, sort of arrogant 20-year-old kid, know-it-all sales guy. And he noticed I was commuting about an hour each way, 5 days a week. So I was in the car 10 hours a week. And so he introduced me to podcasts. He said, hey, listen, these successful people are being interviewed. They're talking about what they've done to become successful. And you should check out some of these conversations. I think you could learn something from them. And Kyle was somebody who I aspired to be like in a lot of different ways. So I took him up on that. I started listening to all different types of shows. And very quickly, I mean, very quickly, I realized that so many of these successful people being interviewed, they were giving at least some credit for their success to the books that they were reading. And I heard the same titles over and over and over again. And so at one point, and I could probably articulate this better today than I could back then, but at one point I realized that if I was deliberately choosing not to read, like I'm too good for reading, I had this ego, then I was also deliberately choosing to live under my potential because these successful people, they gave me the roadmap. They said, this is what I did to build a successful business, a successful mindset, successful relationships, a successful body. Here are the people that I studied, and I'm over here choosing to ignore the advice. Right. So that's how I got introduced to books. And I went over to my local Barnes and Noble one day. I grabbed a stack of 10 books, which was a lot for me at the time financially, a couple hundred dollars. And I started to study during this internship going into my senior year. I only had a couple hours of work every day. So I spent the rest of the time reading and I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah, and some of these books that you're showing online are not just like read this book because it's great and you'll be rich. They're deep dives. They're perspective. They're very. You have some really amazing insight into the depths of these books and your ability to condense it down into like a minute 15 or a minute 30, whatever the limit is on Instagram, just to distill it down and why you should do that. I think it's such a talent, and it's also a tribute to your work ethic and your practice. You had mentioned successful people read. And out of all the people that you've studied, the Elon Musk, the Warren Buffetts, the Charlie Mungers, why successful people? Why do they read?
There are a number of reasons that they read. The first thing that comes to mind is that a great nonfiction book condenses decades of somebody else's lived experience into days of consumption. So you could sit down with Warren Buffett or Charlie Munger or Elon Musk and interview them for a few hours, and you're going to get some amazing responses. But a book is the culmination of decades of lived experience. And then they spend a tremendous amount of time trying to simplify what they've learned into a digestible format that you can consume and apply to your life. So it's like spending hundreds of hours with that person or thousands of hours with that person, not just a couple of hours. So I think it's a way to condense time. Now, I've been thinking about it like this recently. There have been about 100 billion people that have lived throughout the history of humanity. 100 billion. That's and crazy. So although we think that our problems are unique to us, regardless of how unique they feel, the fact is somebody else has figured it out. And chances are they've written about it. And you can go buy that book for $20, spend a few hours of your time reading about the solution that may have taken them decades to figure out. You can apply it to your life and overcome the problem. I also heard Jordan Peterson articulate this in a similar way recently. He said, if you're facing a problem on a daily basis over the next 30 years, so 365 times 30, you're going to experience that problem 11,000 times. Or you could go read a book about how to overcome that problem. So that's why I think they spend so much time reading. It's like the greatest life hack that humanity has ever developed for us, because although I just turned 30 a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you so much. I just turned 30, but over the last 10 years, I've read thousands and thousands and thousands of years worth of other people's lived experiences. So am I 30 or am I thousands of years old? It's a great question, right? So
that is a great question.
I think that's one of the major reasons that people read. And I'll throw one more out there at the risk of going on too long of a rant. In today's society, everything is optimized around instant gratification, social media, So Netflix, true. Social media, whatever it is. Everybody's mining for our attention. And I think one of the best ways to develop an antidote to that is reading a physical paper book, because you're practicing delayed gratification. You're practicing monotasking, the opposite of multitasking. You're focused on one task at the expense of everything else for a prolonged period of time. And as you develop the willpower necessary to stay focused in a book and remove the phone and the Netflix and stuff, that ability to perform deep work is then transferable to others, to other areas of your life. And so, like, if I had to go back and interview for jobs or something, like my agency exploded, I would list the ability to work without distraction as one of my number one skill sets, because that's what reading has taught me to do.
That's amazing, especially because you're looking at it from the lens of, you know, what does this bring to the table for me in my own self-development? I love how you said, am I 30 or am I thousands of years old?
Yeah.
And, you know, just not hope, I hope not biologically, of course, but you know.
I actually just ordered a biological age test for one of my younger brothers and for me, because he keeps making fun of me now that I'm 30, and I think I'm actually younger than he is. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, the numbers don't lie, right?
Yeah.
You know, the notion of instant gratification in our society, it was so true when you said that. And I wanted to expand upon that a little bit more, because, you know, you get to people who are, you know, you get the readers of James Clear, you know, or BJ Fogg. And they, you know, for those of you who don't know, BJ Fogg wrote a great book called Tiny Habits. James Clear wrote a book called Atomic Habits. James Clear used to be a student of BJ Fogg's, I believe, at one point, and BJ Fogg's a professor. I think he was a professor at Stanford. I could be wrong about that, but you know, I think there's a lineage to that. But anyway, with instant gratification, there's a lot of these people who try to habit stack, or they try to condense. I'm going to podcast and then work out on the treadmill and then listen to an audiobook and then I'm going to read the book. And I think when you brought up instant gratification, it reminded me about the overconsumption of information, where it's almost too much input is happening with us in order for us to succeed and excel. And you work with a lot of entrepreneurs and you work with a lot of book authors who are wanting that type of attention. They want people to just binge watch or binge read or binge listen to all of their content. But you're pushing books. And books do take a long time. I mean, you know, the notion of if I read 10 pages a day, I can get through a 300-page book in a month. That's 12 books a year. That used to be great, quite an accomplishment. Now it's like you're underperforming. What do you say to those people that are looking to, you know, or maybe getting caught up in overconsumption and need something else that's going to balance them out, I guess you could say? You know what I mean by that?
I do. One of my favorite reads is called The Art of Learning. It's by Joshua Waitzkin. Joshua Waitzkin was a multi-time national chess champion. He was also a mixed martial arts champion. I forget which discipline within martial arts, but multiple-time national champion in both. And he talked about studying subjects so intensely that they become part of your subconscious, and then your subconscious can act on your behalf. So when he would play a game of chess, he wouldn't have to consciously decide where to move a piece. He could see the board, run thousands of calculations because he studied it so intensely, and then his body would operate and his mind would operate on its behalf by itself, right? Or if he's in a mixed martial arts competition and he's in a position and he needs to get out, he can automatically default to it without having to think through all the decision trees. So I say all of that because reading a 200 or 300 page book gives you a lot of background information that a social media clip doesn't, gives you a lot of background information that a book summary doesn't, or a podcast interview doesn't. It fills in all of the gaps. Typically, books are written, you know, with a story arc of some sort, and so they build and they continue to add additional information, and it's all stacking in the right direction so that by the time you read the home run point, you fully understand it and can take action and implement it. So I do think that's missing in a lot of other forms of learning. The instant gratification stuff is a great discovery mechanism. Like our platform, BookThinkers, is not a replacement for reading a book. It acts as a discovery tool to find your next book. At least that's how I intend it to be consumed. And so, yeah, reading as a form of learning is slow, but you know, you'd have to read like 300 separate one-page articles on a subject and somehow have read them all in the right order to get the same thing that Atomic Habits teaches you, right? It's all laid out.
Interesting.
So that's how I think about it.
For those people out there who are listening right now that are not readers, they're like, oh man, I can't do books. It's just, I don't have time for this. I'd rather just listen to it on 2x speed on Audible and just like crush this whole thing. Or, you know, podcasts, I feel like I know the person. You know, what do you suggest to those people that maybe they do want to read, but they just like are so intimidated by the process of slow and steady and reflection? How can someone take a start? A jump start, or that first step, so to speak, to reading a book?
I have so many things to say to that person. So if you are that person listening or watching today, I'm speaking directly to you. I love to start by asking the following question. If I paid you $10,000 to read a physical paper book and finish it by the end of next month, do you think you could do it? And everybody that tells me they don't have time, right? Everybody goes, yeah, I could do that. I could read five, right? So by saying yes to that question, you fall into my trap. And here's my trap. Okay. You've admitted that it's not a question of whether or not you can read, but it's a question of whether or not you value reading enough to prioritize it over something else, an audiobook, a podcast, Netflix, scrolling on social media, insert whatever you like to do. So once we get to the point where we go, okay, I could read, I'm just choosing not to. Why should you read? I mean, we've already talked about some of the reasons that I think you should read. It's condensing decades of somebody else's lived experience into days, and you're lengthening your attention span, and you're practicing delayed gratification. But in terms of like what's like a little taste, how do you get started? I do recommend reading for 15 minutes a day. And if you can read for 15 minutes twice a day, that's even better. Instead of trying to find time, which is impossible, we all already use our existing 24 hours. Instead of trying to find time, just replace a low impact activity like scrolling on social media or maybe the first 15 minutes of your Netflix session every evening with reading a good book. Not the whole thing. I'm not a robot, right? I still watch Netflix and sports and have fun and scroll on socials, but I replace a little bit of that with reading a great book. Twice a day for 15 minutes, I sort of bookend my days. And just like you mentioned before, the math is crazy. 30 minutes a day is roughly 20 pages for somebody who's just starting out. 20 pages, 5 days a week, it's 100 pages a week. That's a book every 2 or 3 weeks, if you can follow that consistently. And it's not a huge ask, right? To serve your future self, to learn things today that you can leverage for the rest of your life, not a huge lift. I'll say one more thing, which everybody listening probably won't love, but I forget the exact math, but I think roughly 70% of the inputs to our brain are visual. 70%. Mm. So by default, if you're only listening to something, you're at a disadvantage. It's harder to form an emotional relationship with that information and store it efficiently. And if you're only listening to something, my guess is you're probably multitasking. A big portion of your visual input is probably the road right now. If you're in the car or, you know, chores around the house or a set of weights at the gym. And so you are at a disadvantage if you choose to multitask and you choose to ignore the visual input to your brain and only listen to something. Podcasts are so much better than just listening to music, right? So I think that they are better than. But I would say in terms of audiobooks, if you're listening to something that is a biography or it's just satisfying a curiosity of yours, like go ahead and listen to it. I listen to 20 or 30 audiobooks a year. But if I'm really trying to understand and implement information, I default to the physical paper book because I know there are advantages to reading it.
Yeah. And one question I had for you is you said 15 minutes twice a day. Why not suggest pages instead? That seems like a little bit more obtainable.
Yes, I think there are so many different ways to read. You know, in my book, Rise of the Reader, I kind of outline three common formats. So X number of minutes per day, X number of pages per day, or until you've learned X number of new things per day. Mm. So I think there are a few different ways to do that. You know, the reading speed of a book depends on a number of variables, you know, the size of the font, the complexity of the language, the subject matter, whether or not you're familiar with it or not. Are you going to have to stop and look up words? How often is that going to happen? And so 10 pages could take you 10 minutes or it could take you an hour. Whereas if you just say 15 minutes, at least it's a consistent thing in your schedule.
Yeah. And speaking of your book, Rise of the Reader, I know, first off, congratulations on that. I know that was
Thank you. That was a project.
That was a lift. Even from a book guy, that is quite the lift to write your own book, especially after consuming everybody else's book for so many years. For you, with this book writing process, talk to me about what it was it like for you to take all of this knowledge that you have consumed over the years and distilling it down into a book for someone else to consume. I'm curious to see what was the challenge like for you? Was it a challenge or was it easier than you thought it was writing this book?
It was so much harder than I thought it was going to be. So a few years ago, really, three years ago, I was presented with an opportunity to write a book. So one of our business partners who refers business to us, they run a self-publishing services company. They said, hey, if you ever want to write a book, we'll kind of comp you our package, help you develop the book, get it properly edited and formatted and stuff, go through our process in exchange for an ad in the back of the book for our business. I said, okay. And I committed 3 years ago to start writing the book. And I started on fire. I had a lot of energy. I went to the same coffee shop every morning for 3 months. I did my yellow pages where I would sort of warm up before I started writing and I would write. And then as my agency was growing and, you know, I'm traveling and other things are taking priority, I would stop writing for a few months. And then, you know, the whole inspiration for the book came from the fact that I was being asked the same questions over and over and over again from my community. People would say, hey, Nick, appreciate the recommendation. What's another good recommendation for this subject? Or how do I choose the next book I'm going to read? Or how do I take great notes? Or how do I retain more from the books I'm reading? How do I take better action? Right. Mm-hmm. So every time one of these questions would come in, I'd get a short burst of inspiration. And I'd go write for a little while and answer that question and go, ooh, this is an interesting perspective for the book. But it was hard, balancing priorities with my agency and my wedding and travel and all that kind of stuff. And I thought it was going to be easier than it was.
Yeah.
And every time I read another book, I'd go, oh, that reminds me of this. I should add this in there. And so even today, I still feel like it's not done, even though it's been out there for a couple of months now. Yeah.
Do you have more empathy for authors now that you've written a book?
I have so much more empathy for authors now that I've written a book. I thought I knew what it was like because I've had hundreds of people tell me what it's like from their own perspective. But then when you go and do it, there's something different about it. You know, there's an emotional connection to how difficult that process actually is rather than just hearing, oh, it's hard.
Yeah. But if we go back to success and we go back to the notion that, you know, successful people read, you know, leaders are readers. I'm sure you've heard that more times than you can count. What are they reading? Are they reading biographies? Are they reading, you know, finance books? I've heard from multiple people close to me who I would consider highly successful from the lens of just not financial, but personal. They've all told me to read autobiographies or biographies is the fastest way to learn, you know, learning from somebody else's life. In your perspective, what are they mostly reading?
There is a great website called ultimatebooklist.com. I am not affiliated with them. Maybe it's the Ultimate Book List. You'll have to check it out. And you can click on a famous business person or a famous celebrity, and it will show all of the books that they've recommended over time with sources to where they actually made the recommendation. So it's not just, it's not guesswork, it's legit. And it actually will break down their book recommendations based on genre. And so a lot of these successful people are reading entrepreneurship biographies, for instance. And I think it stems, again, from something I'll say, which is condensing decades of lived experience into days. So getting to know how somebody like a Steve Jobs or a Bill Gates or a Jeff Bezos or an Elon Musk makes decisions, and then applying their decision-making frameworks to your own situation, it's a way to accelerate, you know, and think bigger and think outside the box. The analogy that metaphor that I used earlier, where I said, am I 30 or am I thousands of years old? Think about it like this. Walter Isaacson wrote a very detailed biography on Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs started Apple with Steve Wozniak in a garage. It's currently a $1 trillion company. So is that book $20 or does it teach $1 trillion worth of business lessons? I mean, that's how so I think about it, right?
So that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, we worked with this author recently, Laura Castleman. She's the CEO of a company that's doing billions of dollars a year in revenue. And I said that about her book. Like, that was the first time I'd ever thought about it that way. I'm like, I'm literally being mentored with billions of dollars of business decisions. Like, it's for $20. Like, what a great ROI. So yeah, I think a lot of people are reading biographies, autobiographies, memoirs. I think that those are probably the most popular subjects. And then I think that a lot of these successful business people, at least, they're also reading books about economics, you know, the foundations of money, investing. I think money is such an important tool for anything that we want to achieve in life. You don't have to be materialistic to think that way. And it's a system. It's a game. All of these rules are written down on paper, and certain people navigate them better than others. Like, if I'm playing basketball 7 days a week, practicing my free throw, and you step on the court for the first time, you probably won't outperform me because I study that discipline. Same thing with money. People study money every single day for dozens of years. No wonder they're performing well, right? And so I think a lot of these people read about money as well.
Yeah, and I love what you said about looking at it from the value of the book, almost correlated to the value of a company. If you're into entrepreneurship biographies, it's like if you read, it's funny you said Walter Isaacson. So I just got, I feel like I should just be like working for you now. I just got all my books and I can show up to you. But I
did listen to that one.
So I just got this, and my fiance's dad, my future father-in-law, was like, you know, you should really read this biography about Elon Musk that Walter Isaacson did. And, you know, Jobs has been on my list, but I haven't read it yet. But you've inspired me to look at that. Anyway, I don't want to segue too much on this, but I look at this too. And when you were talking about the value of the book correlated with the value of the company, if you're into that stuff, I'm looking like, this is a guy who's got $50 billion. Like, probably more than that. He's the richest man in the world.
200 billion, I think.
Yeah. 200 billion. Yeah, 200 billion. I was way off. But like, you know, he owns X, formerly Twitter. He owns Tesla and SpaceX. And I'm going, I could read this book. And I bought this book probably for $25. And this guy is the richest man in the world. How much could I learn from that? And it's such a great way to reframe it. For all of you listening out there, to hear Nick tell you guys that the value of the book, it's not just what you paid for it. It's almost what you're going to get out of it. And I think that's beautiful how you said that. For 2023, as we're in the new year, we're at the time of recording this, it's the third day of 2024. And looking back on last year, what was the biggest win you had? What was the biggest lesson that you learned? And what is the one thing that you're hoping for in 2024?
They're related, but sort of separate with the two questions you asked. So what was my biggest win of 2023? Getting married, I would have to say, because for the next 70-ish years of my life, I'm with this person. So I think that was the biggest win of my life. And we had such an amazing wedding. It was perfect. We had 70 of our closest friends and family in Aruba. We got married on the beach with the ocean in the background, and it was just so much fun. A week with all of our friends, like blah, blah, blah. So, but here's the biggest lesson, and it's definitely related to that win. What am I optimizing for? It's a question that James Clear and Tim Ferriss and some of these other people, they start every year by saying, what am I optimizing for? And does my calendar reflect that? So the initial breakthrough for me came at the beginning of last year. Well, I say I'm optimizing for health, but I'm only going to the gym 5 times a week for an hour. That's only 5 hours out of the 144 or whatever the math is that I'm spending on my health. Well, I say I'm optimizing for a healthy relationship, but we only go on one date night a week and that's 2 hours. So out of the 144 hours, I'm only spending 2 on this. I say I'm not optimizing for work, but I'm spending 50 hours a week on work, which is so much more than these other buckets, right? So if I gave my calendar to a total stranger and I said, here are the buckets of time and the buckets of different areas of my life, what do you think I'm optimizing for? And it wouldn't be what I say, right? So I started to think about that a lot. And I saw a clip somewhere early last year where somebody said, what's the purpose of life? And the guy responded, he said, I can sum it up in 5 words, enjoying the passage of time. And I thought, that is what I want to optimize for, like joy in the present moment. And that includes health, wealth, relationships, happiness. Spirituality includes a bunch of different things. That's what I want to optimize for. I want to do more of what I enjoy and less of what I don't.
Yeah.
Enjoying the passage of time. So that was my biggest breakthrough last year. And listen, my agency BookThinkers doubled in revenue. Our team doubled in size. The number of clients that we're serving doubled. We provide more value. I got married. We traveled to 10 different countries. Like, all of that served one purpose, which was enjoying the passage of time, getting married to my wife, enjoying the present moment. Everything that I try to do is optimizing for that. Mm. So that's my breakthrough.
I love that. And what are you hoping for 24? What's like your big hope?
Well, once I started to think about life that way, I stopped envisioning a future that was super different than my current moment. You know what I mean? Let me find a different way to articulate it. If you would have asked me this question a year ago, I would have painted a picture for 2024 that was like crazy and different and wild. And now I think of just what I'm currently doing because I've already spent so much time automating, delegating, and eliminating the things that I don't enjoy doing. And so now my calendar is full of the things that I truly love to do. And so what does 2024 look like? I mean, yeah, we have business goals of doubling the business again and stuff like that, but I'm just trying to enjoy my time. That's what I'm optimizing for.
I love that, man. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I started Live Your Truth Media was time freedom and helping people. You know, it was so important to me. And I had a really good role model, my dad, about time freedom. And he was a CFO for a really long time. And I've shared this before on the show, but you know, my dad was a very successful CFO. And one of the things that he had always done, and I don't know how he did it, was he was running companies with people for 50 years where there wasn't really automation. But he always had time to work on his cars. He always had time to go to sports games. And he always had time to garden. And I never understood how he was able to do that. And like now, I think it's so much easier to automate, you know, delegate and eliminate like all of these things because there's software and there's tools. Like imagine what it was like 20 years ago where there was barely any of that. So I love hearing that time, you know, that time and enjoying where you're at right now is so important to you, Nick. I mean, that's great, man.
Yeah. Thank you. I recommend everybody that's listening or watching, if you use your calendar, like if you live out of your calendar like I do, go back a month or something and look at an entire week and then change the icons in your calendar to red if they took energy away from you, yellow if they were neutral, and green if they brought you energy. And then look at that color map and say, man, I've got to get rid of everything that was red or yellow. It's something that I've done a number of times. You know, and another thing that I'll mention, just kind of tying into the road ahead and miles behind for a second, is that one of the goals that I do have kind of moving forward with my family, I've got a family first tattoo and everything, is to spend more time with my parents. And so for Christmas this year, my wife and I gifted my parents a trip with us to Iceland. So round trip tickets covered the whole thing for them. And there's going to be a lot of driving, you know, kind of like a road trip in a way. And to get to know them better and spend more time with them, because I'm one of 4 boys. Everybody's got a life partner. And so when the family's together, it's chaos. There's not a lot of one-on-one time. And so this was an opportunity for us to say like, hey, let's go have an intentional sort of like trip with just you guys and get to know you better as friends. And so I'm really excited for that.
Man, that is so cool. I am so glad you get to do that. When I took that trip with my dad, it changed my life forever. So I am so glad that you're doing that. And I haven't been to Iceland yet, so you'll have to let me know.
I've been a couple of times now, man. I absolutely love it. And it's so wild and different than anything you could see here. That's why I wanted to bring them there. You know, the volcanoes and the geysers and the crazy waterfalls and the, you know, it's like Game of Thrones landscape. It's crazy.
Yeah. I know. God, what is such a great show. I mean, we could probably do a whole other podcast about the last season, but I know that's like forbidden in, you know, Comic-Con circles. Anyway, Nick, we are coming on the last segment of the show. And before we get into it, I just want to thank you so much for your knowledge and for your time and just sharing your truth and your passion for books and for reading. I do encourage everybody to get Rise of the Reader. It's a phenomenal book. It is going to be so powerful for all of you. Looking and finding what is going to be the answer for 2024. And I'm telling you, the books is a way for that. And Nick is a guy that I would default to as how you can read, how you can increase your reading, how you can retain your knowledge, and more importantly, why leaders are readers. So Nick, thank you for that. And also just thank you for just sharing your knowledge. I took a ton of notes on here. I would love to, you know, share with the audience and the community afterwards as well. You know, it's been really great. So thank you again. Where can people find your book and where can people follow you?
If anybody listening or watching wants a custom book recommendation from me, so this is kind of how I'll start things off. One of my favorite things to do is sort of play this book matchmaker role, right? I genuinely believe that the right book at the right time can change your life. So anybody is free to direct message me on Instagram at bookthinkers. And tell me about a problem you're facing or a skill that you want to develop. And I might ask some follow-up questions, but I will provide a custom book recommendation to you and act as your accountability buddy. Follow up with you in 30 days to see if you've read the book and what you've thought about it so far. And then from there are links in our bio on Instagram for the book and everything else that I've got going on.
Yeah, and we'll make sure for everybody, we'll include the links so you can follow Nick. You can get, you find your dream book, not your dream woman. Yes. He's not that type of matchmaker, but he will find a book for you. And Nick, as we're getting into this part of the segment, man, again, thank you so much. But I ask every single guest to tell me their definition of living your truth. So Nick, what does it mean to you to live your truth?
I'm going to sound like a broken record because I'm going to use some similar language here again. But I think that if you live one version of reality, right, you don't put on a separate face around your family or on social media or, you know, at work, like you just live one version of your reality and you let everything go. Everything's aligned. I think that's the most authentic version. That's the most authentic truth that you can live. I think life gets confusing when you, as one human being, try to play multiple roles in society and you have to wear a different face around different people and have different storylines. And it's too confusing. And so the most authentic, truthful version of yourself is the one who enjoys the present moment, enjoys the passage of time, optimizes for what they like to do, automates, eliminates, delegates, whatever, the things that they don't like to do, and shows up. You know, they're of service to the world. I think we all have something very unique to teach and monetize in a way too, because again, that's important. Yeah. So yeah, just somebody who's aligned, you know, and they're like, I'm the same exact person in front of my family as I am in front of the Book Thinkers community, as I am on podcasts, as I am when I'm traveling internet, like, you can meet me anywhere and I'm going to be the same person. I think that that's what it means to be authentic. And unfortunately, society has so many weird restrictions and constrictions and suggestions sometimes limitations that it tries to force on us to bend our reality and force us away from what we truly want to be and do and look like and say and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, without rambling anymore, that's kind of how I think about it.
No, that's a beautiful definition, and authenticity is actually my word of the year. And it's more, and I couldn't agree more with you. We as a society are constricting people from expressing and living freely and fully as they are and as they want to be. And so, you know, the goal of this show is to promote that type of narrative for people that it's okay for you. You have the permission, you have the opportunity to express and be who you are and to live your life as you desire. And with that being said, thank you, Mr. Nick Hutchinson, for all your time, buddy. I really appreciate it. And an amazing episode as always. And thanks to all of you for tuning into this week's episode of Live Your Truth Now. If you like what you heard, please give us a follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're watching this video, please go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. I'll see you next time. Take care, everyone.